since the park opened in 1978 and has since closed.
And they didn't even have a roller coaster.
Yeah.
That was just people jumping off of stuff. Dying
I
in
went
the wave
on that
pool.
Slide that, you know, the Alpine slide.
Yeah,
crazy.
They had the Alpine slide. People
dangerous.
Were breaking their neck on that thing.
Yep. The most recent instance of a roller coaster malfunction that resulted in a fatality was in July of 2017, the Ohio State Fair. It was a fireball ride. It malfunctioned and led to one death and six injuries. So, yeah, so it's, and this is up to date. This is 2022, just published a couple weeks ago. So it has been 5 years since roller coaster accidents, but those are the only the ones in the U.S. Like I said, there's some other ones off in Russia and Germany.
Surprise.
You go into the woods and they get some, you know, 1920s coasters that are still flipping around killing people every week or two.
Yeah, but the thing about it is, surprisingly, even those are pretty well maintained.
Yeah.
Because they're used all the time, and anybody who's got one has to deal with all kinds of licensing and insurance issues to have it.
Yeah. You know what I liked? The Galaxy. Do you remember the Galaxy coaster?
I love the old Galaxy.
Yeah, it was basically like a two or four-person car. It was a four-person car. And what they did was, if people weren't ready to go, they would let the car go, and they'd go around empty.
Yeah.
And they'd be flying around. You know, I remember toward the end of the night, it was great to get on the Galaxy.
Yeah.
And just fly around. So Canopy Lake Park, you know, was one of them. Rocky Point was my favorite amusement park.
They had one at York Beach. Mm-hmm. York Beach in Maine up until a few years ago.
Yep.
And I think they sold it. They replaced it with a brand new, like they built a brand new roller coaster up there. About the same size as the Galaxy, but it's a modern steel coaster and allegedly is a little bit more fun. But for my money, those Galaxies were great. You get some good drops on them. They inevitably had that huge helix at the end.
Yeah.
That just completely disoriented you.
Yeah.
And you'd look at the thing and you're like, oh, this is going to fall down. That was part of the fun of riding it.
Yeah.
Is it looks like it's going to fall apart while you're on it. They never do.
Riverside Park, before it became Six Flags, had that old wooden roller coaster there, too. This was out in Springfield. I'm pretty sure it's still there. But, yeah, it was pretty awesome.
Their old Cyclone coaster, they had to modify the first drop on it.
Yeah, I was there for the opening of the first Cyclone. It was the largest wooden roller coaster in the U.S. at the time. It opened in the 80s. I think it was like 86.
Because that first drop was too intense.
Yeah.
And what they replaced it with, according to some people, they shortened it and they put a lift coming off the bottom of it. It was even more intense.
Yeah.
And I never went on the original version of it. I can tell you that the revised version of it is one of the most forceful drops I've ever had on any coaster.
Nice. Nice. All right, you're listening to WMFO in Medford, Massachusetts. We are going to take a short break, and I'm going to play you a little bit of Van Halen, Humans Being. This is from the Twister soundtrack. We're doing all disaster movies. We're talking about them until 7 p.m. Thanks for listening to your Freeform station. It's WMFO in Medford. We'll be right back.
a Miami man brought home a live turkey for Thanksgiving. He didn't count on making a new friend. In the end, his family couldn't kill the friendly, curious young bird who gobbled back when spoken to. If you got to know a turkey, would you have the heart to hurt him? This Thanksgiving, give a bird a break by serving a vegan feast. Visit PETA.org for tasty free recipes and to order Paul McCartney's favorite Save Turkeys t-shirt.
Oh my God. Talk about a real horror show.
Yes. Yes. I could harm the turkey because he's
nice
delicious.
Vegan. Have a nice vegan turkey.
Yeah,
Darren.
You have a nice vegan.
With Paul McCartney. I'm Paul McCartney. Yeah. I'm going to eat a vegan dinner for Thanksgiving. The guy can afford like a turkey farm. He can afford like having his own turkey farm. And what does he do? He has a vegan turkey for Thanksgiving. What
I'll be
dope.
Enjoying fresh dead bird on
what
Thanksgiving.
A dope.
That's, you know.
And you like to cook your own turkey.
Oh,
you like to make a nice turkey.
I love cooking the turkey. That's
and
one
you
of the best.
Do you put a little something on it? Do you put things in the, you put the giblets, you take the giblets out and you put things in it, right? You stuff it and you baste it, don't you?
So I do it two different ways now.
Yeah.
The last couple of years I've been getting a turkey at Thanksgiving, which I cook the traditional way.
Nice.
There is no brining. I get a fresh
That's
turkey.
Right. That's
there
right.
is
you
no
don't
brining.
Do the brining. Right.
Okay.
Yep.
If you are brining your turkey, I do not want to come over and have any.
Yeah.
You're welcome to all of that. A good turkey does not need to be brined.
Yeah.
Okay. In what world does soaking something in salt water make it more flavorful?
Yeah. Yeah.
Explain that to me.
I don't know. I don't think it does.
Makes it taste more like salt.
I'm not a big salt guy. I never have been.
I stuff my turkey.
Yeah.
If you do not stuff your turkey, I do not want to come over. The best stuffing comes out of the turkey.
Yeah.
And if you can't figure out how to get everything to the proper temperature, you should not be cooking Thanksgiving dinner.
Mm-hmm.
Your problem is not stuffed or unstuffed bird. Your problem is that you don't know how to cook. And then there's a butter and herb mixture that goes under the skin on top of the meat before I roast it.
Nice butter and herb.
So for
I bet anything would taste delicious in butter and herb.
So for Christmas, I roast the turkey, but I make a gravy. And to make the gravy, you have to stuff the bird with some of the ingredients for the gravy.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's onions and things that go inside the turkey while it's roasting.
Nice.
It is heavenly. It is absolutely heavenly. The gravy is to die for, but you can't stuff it.
Yeah.
So I don't get that out of the bird stuffing that I dearly, dearly love. So
PETA won't be over at your house.
PETA's not invited. No yeah. vegans need darken my door on Thanksgiving Day.
The PETA turkey ad. Wow.
Unless you want to be, you know, smacked across the face with a giblet.
I can't believe I can believe it's on there. All I know is I've been part of PSAs for years. I didn't let that one pass.
Yeah.
I wouldn't let
let that one pass. Seasonally appropriate.
Yeah, it is seasonally appropriate.
I understand your anti-cruelty message, but for one day a year, let us be the carnivores we are.
Yeah, let's eat turkey, man.
You know, go be a vegan again tomorrow.
President Podden's one. One is enough. And the thing is this. There's millions. There's not millions. There's like a billion turkeys.
Well, not this year.
There's like 7 billion turkeys in the world.
They killed them all for the bird flu. So.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
How many turkeys are there? That's a good question.
I don't know.
How many turkeys are there? I'm going to write that.
Enough.
They're going to say including humans or just birds?
I know there's 6 of them walking around stoning them.
How many turkeys are there? It says 6 to 7 million wild turkeys. They live in every state.
Yeah.
Except Alaska. That's interesting. I didn't know that.
Well, it's because Alaska's like all mountains and ice and stuff and nothing can really get over there.
A bald eagle can.
Like turkeys.
You need a bald eagle in Alaska probably. What do they eat?
They eat wolf. They eat whatever they can find, basically.
In Alaska,
they eat like grass, seeds, berries.
I'll tell you the two states that bother me a lot. I mean, you'd think Florida. Florida's always a bad one. Louisiana, but the two where people are hiding are Maine and Alaska.
Mm.
That's where most of the degenerates go. A lot of people with brains go to Maine or Alaska. A lot of the really shifty people. They've done something wrong, and they need to live up there.
I find that North Dakota is wildly underrated in this category.
North Dakota, there's nobody around.
That's the point.
Yeah, I've been there. There's nobody there.
Yeah.
Montana, there's nobody there. It's like one person like every 10 square miles or something. It's crazy.
Well, all the rich scoundrels go hide in Vermont, and all the middle-class scoundrels go hide in Maine. The poor scoundrels go hide in Alaska.
Yeah.
The really poor scoundrels go hide in Florida.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever think there would be end titles by Alex and Edward Van Halen?
No.
Well, there are in 1996's Twister, another reason to love it.
I also think the lyric "Humans Being" is beneath that band.
It's great.
That no, it's not. It's the final. Poor.
It's the final Sammy Hagar Van Halen song
for a reason.
It's great.
Bad writing.
What I always thought
Eddie
is they
standing
have,
there like really well, humans if you, being. If this you is listen, what you get.
If you listen, it's got it's pretty much got David Lee Roth in there because the voice is in the background, and yep. I believe David Lee Roth also sang Humans Being, and it was supposed to be both of them because they came out with the best of, and then when nobody got along, they just kicked everybody out. Alex and Eddie are like, we're out of here.
Yep.
We're taking our name and we're going.
But when you listen to the end of that song, it does sound a lot like
I
David
Me
Lee
Wise
Roth
Magic.
Era Van Halen.
Yeah, when they did Me Wise Magic, a better song than Humans Being
with
David Lee Roth. But still, hey, it's Van Halen, man.
Yeah.
You got to love him.
It's like Tom Brady's last season in the NFL. Should have quit.
Well, Gary Cherone is Gary Cherone's the worst part of Van Halen, I think. Sure. Or actually, I would say Alex Van Halen is the worst part of Van Halen.
No,
he's a great drummer.
Yeah,
but what a jackass!
It's tough when David Lee Roth is in the room.
No. David Lee Roth is the best part of Van Halen.
No, he's not.
Oh, of course.
Eddie
he is
the best part.
No.
Yes.
No.
Eddie's guitar is Van Halen.
Yes and no. You don't have a better front man. All right, we can argue about this, but you don't have a better frontman than David Lee Roth, I don't think. You could say your Bonos, you could say your Pearl Jam guy, you could say Springsteen, but he's pretty much a leader of a band that's named after
Where's
him.
Where's Steven Tyler in this conversation?
Yeah, no. David Lee Roth.
Have
much
you forgotten
than...
about Mick Jagger?
No. No.
Okay, you're going to
David put, Lee Roth is
You're
going to
take David Lee Roth over Mick
much,
Jagger.
He's much more fun, he's more accessible. He would give you the shirt off his back, and he'd give you a roundhouse kick to protect you. Remember when David Lee Roth like ran after the guy and he like roundhouse kicked him, and he like gave like a lady back her pocketbook, and he wrote on like an EMT. David Lee Roth, you got to go out and read Crazy from the Heat. Fantastic.
Mick Jagger would give you a Porsche, and the glove box would be full of cocaine.
Ah, no.
David Lee
I would
Roth,
much rather hang out with David Lee Roth.
David Lee Roth would give you a used Pontiac Fiero.
And this is after he canceled on me in Vegas at the beginning of the year. I never want to see him again because he cost me about a couple thousand dollars in the beginning of the year. But by far, that doesn't exclude me from knowing who the best frontman in rock and roll was, and it was David Lee Roth.
Remember the radio show?
Which one?
The David Lee Roth show?
Yeah, but that wasn't him being a band leader. That was him doing his own podcast.
That wasn't
really
good.
It wasn't planned. And they threw a bunch of money at him and said go do something. So he invited his sister and his brother or something to come to the show and talk about anything.
I mean,
our show is much better than that.
I used to have
and we're here in college radio.
I used to have a great joke about that show, which is coming out for this Christmas. The best of the David Lee Roth show will be available as an MP3.
right.
And the very best of the David Lee Roth show will be available as a downloadable ringtone.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about some more disaster movies here. We had we were talking about Twister. Let's move on to other things that twist. How about a hurricane? What's a good hurricane movie? Did you see the one with Julianne Moore? It was set, I believe it's in Japan. Oh, no, I'm sorry. It's Naomi Watts. I think it was called that. Was it The Happening? No. Naomi Watts.
That's the one with the earthquake and the tsunami happening simultaneously, I believe, and just everything starts exploding all over the
Good
place.
Good movie. Did you see it?
I've seen parts
Owen
of
McGregor's
it.
Ewan McGregor's in it, too, I think.
I've seen parts of it. I haven't seen the whole thing. The special effects in that are pretty spectacular.
Yeah, it's based on a true story. A 2004 Indian Ocean earthquake and tsunami in Thailand. They're vacationing in Thailand. And the three kids, and then all of a sudden, you know, they get taken down. It's Tom Holland is in it too. Spider-Man's in
I've
it,
seen.
Right?
I've seen that. Yeah, that's actually. I'm thinking of a different Japan set thing. That's really good. But that's more of a drama than a disaster movie.
Yeah, but it's a tsunami.
And
an earthquake.
Yeah, but it's more of a survival story. It's about the aftermath more than it's about the actual tsunami.
Yeah, but that scene is just amazing.
And
when they're all in there and they get the branch in the leg while they're swimming and stuff. Yeah,
it sort of follows disaster movie rules, but not as closely as some of the other stuff. No one's going to mistake it for an Irwin Allen movie, let me put it that way.
King Kong, disaster movie or not?
Technically, yes, and that puts Cloverfield and Godzilla and all the other things.
That's right.
Because you have a city being destroyed by major force.
That's right. That's the link right there to horror.
I think the... Yep. the Dino De Laurentiis King Kong is less a disaster movie than the original.
Yeah.
Because it spends a lot of time just on the boat and on the island and developing everything.
But also you have that amazing poster that they did when they're on the World Trade Center, when King Kong's on the World Trade Center, like taking down the helicopters.
I went to the movie expecting to see that, and that scene actually is not in the movie.
Right, exactly.
There is a scene where Kong jumps from one tower to the other.
Yeah.
But there's no scene where he's standing on both of the Twin Towers at the same time.
There's a lot of like monkey hands grabbing Jessica Lange. Yeah. You know, and a lot of affectionate looks. But yeah, you don't see a whole lot of climbing up buildings like you do in the original King Kong with the Empire State Building.
Special effects by one Carlo Rambaldi, who also created E.T.
Nice. Very good. But yeah, so hurricanes. And then there was like that earthquake 9.5 or something.
What else was on that top 10 list?
The top 10 list we also had here. We had Dante's Peak. The other volcano movie was kind of lousy.
That's the Pierce Brosnan one. That's terrible.
Yeah, yeah. The one that was better was Volcano.
Yeah.
With Tommy Lee Jones. Yeah, that was pretty good.
As the public works guy with a bunch of bulldozers. And we're going to stop the lava with bulldozers.
Well,
because that will work.
Would you rather be in the volcano with lava coming at you or a hurricane? You've already been in a hurricane, probably. We all have.
Yeah.
If you lived long enough, you survived a hurricane.
I would probably take the hurricane just because unpredictable things can happen in a volcano. Like toxic gas and giant rocks coming out of nowhere at you.
Mm. Yeah, that's true. You can have projectiles coming up in the air from the volcano. Joe versus the volcano. We talked about that one a little bit. Comedy movie or disaster movie or a little of both?
Disaster of a comedy movie. Really not funny.
There you go.
So what else we got? We got Dante's Peak.
Yeah. Hold on. Let me give you another. Oh, I'm going to give you one that I like. All right. And it's not on this list, but you ever see Take Shelter? I think I talked about this movie before.
No.
It's got Michael Shannon in it, who was in Boardwalk Empire and a number of other movies, Nocturnal Animals and Revolutionary War, Road. Just a great, great movie. He's having these dreams of the apocalypse, all right? This is going out full disaster. The Earth's going to die. So he's having these biblical dreams about rain that's like fresh motor oil, except it's orange. Swarms of birds are flying around his house. So he's seeing all these things. So what do? They think he's this crazy man who's schizophrenic, and all the people that he's close to start to not want to talk to him anymore. And all of a sudden, his visions start to come true. So they're like, maybe he's a prophet, maybe not. Great, great movie. It's a great movie. So basically, Take Shelter is he's like Noah in the Ark. He starts building a shelter in his backyard, and he starts buying these gigantic rooms to put in the field in LaGrange, Ohio, so he and his family can survive the apocalypse that's coming, that he believes is coming. And his wife's ready to leave him. The kid's ready to leave him. So it explores a lot of themes of mental illness. What people go through to protect the ones they love. Also themes of being macho and masculine, and, you know, because he's a construction worker and all the construction guys are like, this guy's crazy. You're not one of us anymore. You're just crazy. And it came out about 10 years ago. Came out in 2011. Jessica Chastain plays the wife, and Michael Shannon is the husband. And like I said, it's more of a psychological thriller, but it is a great disaster movie.
Because you've got all the disaster stuff happening around this.
Yes, you have all these visions that are happening, and the special effects, there's a small budget on it, and it didn't do great. It wasn't really theatrically released. I ended up seeing it on like at HBO or Netflix one night, whatever it was. But I'm like, man, what a great movie. It's definitely worth seeing. And it was a winner at Cannes for something or other. It won a couple of awards there. It was like a second place, like the Prix Award or something, the Leaf Award or something like that. But Roger Ebert, before he passed away, he gave the movie 4 out of 4 stars. And he said Michael Shannon, he plays a stable husband and a father with a good job in construction, and he evokes with his eyes a manner of deep unease. Here's a frightening thriller that's based not on special effects gimmicks, but just this dread that quietly spreads in the land. Good days are ending, and the climate changes, and other sinister forces are going to sweep us away. and sweep away our safety. It's really a cool, cool movie.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's a really cool movie. I think that that word of dread that he says, it's just, you feel it through the whole movie.
Yeah.
And it's disturbing. And that's why I think, you know, it fits into like this horror theme here too. It's a pretty cool movie.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it's check definitely worth seeing. It's much different than any other movie I think I've seen. It's really cool. So,
have you ever seen in a slightly similar vein? Have you ever seen Last Night?
No. What is that?
Last Night is a 1998 Canadian film.
Yeah.
Set during the last hours on Earth.
Okay.
A disaster is going to occur. Everybody knows it. These are the last hours that the Earth is going to exist.
Mm.
And it follows a group of people. You know, it basically bounces. There's like one character who's sort of, it, as in a lot of these ensemble films, there's one character who's sort of the link between everybody else.
Mm.
But it asks the question of, you know, what do you do on your last day on Earth? Don McKellar is the lead character in this. His girlfriend has just died, and he's lost. You know, he's trying to figure out, like, what the world's going to end. My girlfriend died. What am I going to do? His mother is celebrating Christmas and invites him over to celebrate Christmas because they're going to go out on Christmas.
Yeah.
Sarah Pauly is in this as his sister.
So she's a teenager in the 20s at this
she's
point.
She's young. Sandra Oh is in it. She's
Sandra Oh.
And she's somebody who's her car breaks down.
I call her Sandra Oh.
She's trying to get back to her family and she can't because she's stuck in the city.
Yeah.
And there's no way to get anywhere. David Cronenberg is in this movie as an actor and basically playing like the head of the local power company. He's calling up all of his customers to apologize for the service going out. There's another Callum Keith Rennie is in it as the friend of the lead character who is going to spend his last hours on Earth completing his sexual conquest list.
Oh.
And he's written all
of
his...
That's what he's doing in his last hours?
Yeah. He's written this list of sexual experiences that he wants to have.
Yeah.
And he's basically going through the list and checking them all off.
Hmm. You know, years ago, I think that's kind of a young man's game. Because years ago, I'd be like, yeah, I'd call up the woman I love and go be with her. And like now, I'd just be like, nah, I think I'd have a sandwich and just relax.
Just wait,
have a drink.
It's a dark comedy, and it's kind of fun because it spends all of its time really dealing with that, you know, that act two in the disaster movie where it's like, how do you survive? You know, like, what are you going to do to try and get out of this situation?
Yeah.
You can't get out. You know you're going to die in a few hours.
Mm.
What are you going to do?
I know. You know, that one this year on Netflix was lousy. The guy that did The Big Short and everybody released it at Christmas time.
Don't Look Up?
Don't Look Up. It was lousy. There were parts of it I liked, but to me, these movies are like, they're unfinished movies. They're like made for video movies with no big budgets, no great, like no good sound production. It's just a mess.
That movie,
don't you think?
That movie infuriated me.
And it was preaching.
Preaching aside, that movie infuriated me because there were some really, really good set pieces in that movie that had they been in any other movie.
Yeah.
Would have been hilarious. But because they're in the middle of that screaming, hyperventilating mess of a film.
Yeah, and then you have the finally family dinner scene that you said you didn't like.
Yeah, another one. All hope is lost is have the family dinner.
Right.
Please stop.
Please stop. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. That one sucked.
Meryl Streep with the tramp stamp. I mean, this is
this is
high comedy. Ha ha.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure Meryl shows it at her cocktail parties.
Yeah, I'd love to see a 70-year-old woman's tramp stamp on the big screen.
Here's another good one for you. Sean Connery star Meteor.
Meteor, yeah.
Meteor is a terrible movie.
It's a very bad movie.
It came out in
79, right when Moonraker was big, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And he decides to follow up that Moonraker movie with Meteor.
Yeah.
Right, because he was fighting Roger Moore with his Bond movies. That's an awful one. That's
never
also
should've
on the list here. Let's see, Crimson Tide's in there as a disaster movie. Not a disaster I wouldn't consider movie. That. I'd consider that an action movie.
No, it's a drama.
I'm going to give you the best disaster TV show I've seen in 20 years. You saw Chernobyl, right?
On HBO.
Yeah. Fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, what a great show. And saying so much about, you know, what to do to survive, what to do, you know, for your country, especially if you're a communist and you're in Mother Russia, and like how they went through that whole thing. I mean, what an amazing performance by all of them across the board in Chernobyl. I would tell anybody to go watch that.
For whatever reason.
What an amazing, amazing show it was.
Union rules or whatever it is. Every one of these things has one episode that is just padding.
Yeah,
it's there to give a director and a writer or somebody else a job. And in Band of Brothers, the padding episode was the best episode of the entire series.
Right.
Which is the Battle of the Bulge.
Yeah.
Where you're
yeah.
following the medic through Bastogne.
Yes.
And into the hospital. And it's like, it breaks all the action. It has nothing to do with the rest of the story. It's the extra episode that they need to get in there.
Mm-hmm.
It's brilliant. I will say much the same thing for Chernobyl.
Yeah.
The padding episode is the one where they go out and they have to deal with the pets that have been left behind.
The pets?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And they have to shoot the pets.
You got
four
guys in the truck, and the one guy that we've been following like has to go and shoot everybody's family dog.
Yeah.
It is a harrowing episode. It's an episode that did not need to be there to advance the rest of the story in any way, shape, or form.
I gave the leads a little time off.
But
that was about it.
But
right?
It lets you into the scope of that disaster.
Yep.
Because you didn't think about that. You didn't think that somebody had to go out and shoot all the animals because you can't have radioactive animals running around the countryside.
Right.
They're going to go into the next town and people are going to get radiation sickness.
Yeah. Awful.
That and the guy dying of radiation poisoning and like his skin turns translucent.
He's
just melting away into a puddle of goo.
Yeah. I mean, the nuclear disaster movies are just crazy. The Day After on ABC in 1985, that was an event.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was an event. Like, everybody watched that. That was, like, the height of, you know, Russia and the U.S.
Yep.
We are going to... It's a question of when. It's not a question of if this is going to happen or not. It was a question of when.
That was the fear back in, back in the early 80s.
Yeah.
I watched that movie. I believe it was...
I was a young man, 14.
Yeah, I believe that...
It was 83, actually. 83.
Did it run Thanksgiving weekend or Christmas weekend?
I want to say it was... I know it was in the wintertime. It was November 20th, yes.
It was Thanksgiving weekend.
Yeah.
That was the only thing anybody wanted to talk about in school on Monday.
Yeah.
Because every kid in school had watched it, and every kid in school was scared.
Yeah. And it was like, funny. It was funny because some people died, and other people they hid under their truck, and they were okay.
Yeah.
Jason Robards hides under his truck, and he's fine.
Yeah, do not rely on that movie for nuclear survival advice, please, because none of that is accurate.
There's no ducking. There's a few ducking covers.
Like you're not going to hide under your car when the blast goes off and survive.
Right.
Okay. That's not how any of that works.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Guttenberg losing his hair is a little closer to the truth.
Yeah. I'll tell you, a better one is the When the Wind Blows. Roger Waters did the soundtrack. Amazing cartoon. This is scary. That's a disturbing movie.
There's a little subgenre of like nuclear disaster movies.
Yeah.
The best of all of them, you know, if you consider the most disturbing and harrowing of them the best, is Threads.
I've never seen Threads, I don't think.
Made by the same guy that did The Bodyguard.
Okay.
Interestingly. It's basically the BBC's take on The Day After.
Huh.
Only it's much more...
Oh, okay, yes, okay, I know.
It's much more down to earth.
Yeah.
It is based on actual science instead of The Day After, which is like, let's put Jason Robards in jeopardy, and here's John Lithgow, you know?
Yeah.
Coming up next, red buttons in a fallout shelter.
Yeah.
This Threads does not play around. Threads, like, beats you over the head... With the dismal aftermath of a nuclear war until you can't look at it anymore.
Mm.
And then it beats you some more. It is a brutal, brutal motion picture to watch. The one that I recommend everybody should see, by the way.
Yeah.
Last I knew, you could watch it on YouTube.
Really?
Somebody's got it out there in full.
Let me see. I'll have a look-see. We'll see. If we could post it. We could post it on our group page.
I own
Horse Show on WMFO.
I own the Blu-ray from Severin Films, and I do not recommend the Blu-ray because the copy of it that they had was atrocious. It's one of the worst Blu-ray scans I've ever seen.
It is on here. They've got the trailer. Yeah. They've got the movie.
Yeah. Yep. Watch that if you get a chance. That'll.
I've never seen the whole thing, but I saw pieces of it because I actually wrote a, I wrote an essay on movies that had nuclear war in them back in college.
It'll curl your hair.
Yeah.
It'll absolutely curl your hair. When the Wind Blows may be on YouTube. I've also got that on Blu-ray. Severin Films has available.
And a fantastic soundtrack. Roger Waters and his Bleeding Heart Band.
Fantastic soundtrack.
Yeah.
It's based on a story by Raymond Briggs, who at this time of year you may know from The Snowman.
Mm-hmm.
Same art style, animated by many of the people who worked on Yellow Submarine. And it's just harrowing because you spend the entire film with this old couple.
Who aren't that bright.
Who aren't that bright. They live through World War II, and they pretty much think that this is going to be like that.
Right.
And they're following the advice that the government gave them to survive, and it's wholly inadequate. And you basically spend the last hour of the film watching this sweet old couple die.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it's disturbing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's these films all come to the same conclusion, which is, you know, it's like at the end of the day after, they have that text that comes up, and we're like, this is much less horrible than an actual nuclear war would be.
Right.
You know? What, you mean Jason Robards might not live in his car?
Right.
Like,
right.
John Lithgow's going to lose his hair, too?
I'm going to give you one. Disaster movie or not disaster movie. War Games.
Not a disaster movie.
I wouldn't say it's a disaster movie, either.
It's a thriller.
It is a thriller.
It's an action
it's
thriller.
It's an action thriller.
But not a disaster
movie. Kind
of a
spy movie, too.
Yeah, because the bombs never go off, and you don't have that cast of disposable characters to die.
Right, right. What was that one a few years ago where, like, everybody goes? Like, the day after tomorrow or something like that.
They
killed off quite a few people
that was
in that
the
one.
Environmental disaster movie where they were running from the cold.
Yeah. Talking about the cold. Here's a tough one. Alive. What would you do if you were stranded and you had to eat your friends?
Not a disaster movie.
You don't think that's a disaster movie?
No.
Sure it is.
No.
Well, it's a survival movie.
It's a survival movie, but that's a different.
Oh my
that's
God,
a different category.
I don't know, man. I don't look at any of my friends' fingers and be like, I'm going to eat those if I'm hungry. I never do that.
That's the Revenant territory. The people they ate were dead. And frozen in the snow, and if you're on the side of a mountain and nobody's coming and you've got to eat.
Yeah, but then somebody comes.
You know.
Like right after you just had lunch, you know?
Yeah.
Somebody comes and saves you.
It's always how it goes.
You're like, oh yeah, so what happened to Ethan Hawke? Well, we ate him.
Yeah.
We had him. We had some rolls and, you know, figured, you know, throw some meat on that roll. So we ate my buddy Ethan Hawke. That was, I would consider that a disaster movie.
Donner Party, Table for Eight.
Survival
drama.
Oh,
I'm sorry, Seven.
Yeah. So that's been, So that's been a big thing, too. So they said they're going to do another season of that, but they're going to use somebody else. What is this fascination that people have? And I have to throw the gender thing out. I think, and this may say something about me, too. Most women that I've known love these serial killer movies.
Oh, yeah.
And they love these serial killer, like, TV shows, like the ID Channel or whatever it is. It's like they're always playing these serial killer things. What is the fascination with serial killers? I don't get it.
I have no idea.
I've never gotten that. And, like, most of these girls that I know, they just love it. They're just so fascinated by it. Like, they just, it's almost like this erotic thrill of what if they came after me?
It's,
what would I do?
I'm sure someone has broken down the psychology of it. It's not just investigation discovery.
Mm-hmm.
It's what the entire potboiler industry was based on.
Yeah.
It's what the entire Italian news media is based on.
Mm-hmm.
Is women love lurid, sexy, gory, nasty stories.
Yeah.
And seeing all these nasty, you know, hearing about all these nasty things that happened. Men are kind of indifferent to it.
Well,
you know, it's like we like them, but we're not like, oh my God, I got to go watch all of these.
No, I find it disturbing more than anything. I don't think I'm indifferent to a serial. I just find it disturbing. I don't really want to learn more about them. I'm actually more of the forget about them, throw them away, lock the key up. You know,
I'm watching Dahmer because Dahmer is and with the 2-year-old, it's taking us forever to get through Dahmer because we can't watch it when the 2-year-old.
You're watching
around.
It with him?
No, we're not letting him watch Dahmer.
Yeah, no, you shouldn't.
We let him watch what is it? The Theranos thing.
Theranos?
Yeah, the story about Elizabeth Holmes.
I don't know.
That's on that. There's a series about that that's on one of the cable channels. I think Showtime, maybe Hulu.
Is that for kids?
No. Well, it's a thing. Is we let the kid watch it and he learned the F word.
Yeah.
And then proceeded to walk around for the next 2 days saying the F word.
Oh no.
So he's definitely not watching Dahmer.
Mm-hmm.
And as a parent, Dahmer scares the hell out of me because is my kid going to grow up to be like Jeffrey Dahmer?
Right. Right.
I would hope not.
He'll be fine. It's a TV show. Most people don't. You really have to be messed up.
The thing about Dahmer is it's real. You know, it's based on the actual facts of the case.
Yeah, but just watching it doesn't make you a...
Oh, no. I'm talking about the existential.
Yeah.
You know, you sit there and you watch Dahmer and you have a son and you're like, what if my son grew up and started eating people? That would be bad.
Well, I think it's human to think things like that. I think. It's not necessarily healthy in the long term if you're thinking about it every day, but you have to think about it. You have to pose the hard questions. That's what I think.
And here's, you know, here's my adorable, naive little wife. We start watching this. She's like, I didn't know he was eating people. How did you not know that?
Well,
that was the biggest part of the story.
She wasn't necessarily around when that was happening.
No,
right?
she was. Young. She wasn't. Yeah. She was. He was arrested in what, 91?
Yeah. He was arrested in the 90s, but most of the killings were in the 80s, weren't they?
But all the details of that came out in the early 90s, and she was like 12, 13 years old, the kind of age when you tend to be fascinated by that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And somehow the fact that he was eating people was just lost on her.
He died in 94.
He died in 94. Yeah. It was 91 he was arrested.
What was interesting is I saw like an SNL and Chevy Chase was like, he was guesting. I don't think he was the host, but he just showed up and they had a Dahmer sketch where he's literally eating like a finger in jail while the lawyers are talking to him, like they're talking about his defense and stuff, and like people were just like a couple of groans, but most people are laughing. It goes to show how different things are, you know, 20 years later. Well, it's 27 years later now. You know, it's like that would never make it on SNL or, you know.
You're being disrespectful to the people
God.
He killed.
Of course. I mean, but can you imagine, you know, at the time, you know, it's like all of a sudden they're making fun of it. It's just like, oh, my God. It was just something you had to put up with.
Yeah. It's like, really, no, we're not making fun of the people he killed. We're making fun of him, but, you know.
Backdraft. We'll go on to Fire. You ever see Backdraft? The one about the firemen and the backdraft is that thing that's underneath the door, and you think the door's cool, so you open the door, and then, boom, hits you in the face.
It's tough to nail whether that's a disaster film or just...
Well, plenty of fire in it. Fire's a big disaster.
Yeah.
Fire's a living thing, but, I think. That's what's scary about fire is you never really know where it's going when it starts.
But the thing about the real disaster movie is you've got a bunch of people from like different walks of life who may or may not be equipped to deal with the disaster.
Yeah, but you're stuck in a burning building, you know.
Backdraft.
That makes a disaster, and Backdraft is about the people fighting.
But it's about firefighters.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they deal with disaster all the time, but they're capable and they're competent.
Mm-hmm.
It has a lot of the hallmarks of a disaster movie. It does a lot of the things that disaster movies do.
Mm.
But I'd put it more as a drama than a disaster film.
How about Deepwater Horizon? You see that one?
I did see that.
How was that?
That was actually pretty good.
I heard it was. Yeah, I didn't see it.
It's not a movie that you're going to walk away from and be like, oh boy, that's the best movie I ever saw. But it's well made. It's entertaining, which may or may not be like a desirable outcome here.
Yeah,
because like people died on that, and now we're gonna make. And now here I am being the guy saying, "Don't have Chevy Chase eat the finger."
Yeah.
There's something a little odd about watching it because it tries to play it so close to what really happened.
Right.
That you're like, you understand that like we're grinding up workers so that we can have like a hero escape story.
Yeah, I didn't see it. I heard it was pretty good.
It is actually pretty well made and pretty entertaining and does follow all of the... It feels a lot like a lightweight Michael Bay kind of disaster movie.
Hmm. Did you see All Is Lost with Robert Redford?
I don't think so.
He's on the boat and he's going to sail and then he's stuck by himself. He has a collision with a shipping container at sea. And he's a sailor. He's been a sailor all his life. And he basically stares mortality in the face and has to survive out there on the ocean. And it's pretty much just him the entire movie. And it's interesting to see what he does in order to fix things.
That's a survival film, not a disaster film.
Yes.
The Revenant falls in that category.
I'll tell you something, though. If I was sailing out there and I was by myself hit by a shipping container, I'd be like, this is a disaster.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'd be like, this is a disaster.
But, you know, you're not going to see Shelley Winters
because
like,
I don't
fall
know I'm
going to
survive. Yeah, but I don't know I'm going to survive.
Yeah, no, but you know, for entertainment value, wouldn't you rather be watching Shelley Winters fall to her death? Or
I didn't know what was going to happen to Robert Redford. I figured he'd live.
Yeah,
but yeah, it's a cool movie. Did you see that Moonfall? That was a recent one.
I haven't seen Moonfall yet.
Yeah, me neither.
That's one that I do want to see.
Now, we can go into horrid territory there, too. We talked about how all zombie movies are pretty much disaster movies.
Yeah.
Yeah. What was up with these ones with The Rock? Like, didn't he do Skyscraper, San Andreas? Those were all, like, he's doing, like, a Will Ferrell comedy, and, like, Will Ferrell does every comedy movie, and Schwarzenegger did all these disaster movies at some point, too. He was trying to become super action star like Stallone. And
San Andreas was kind of fun.
Yeah.
It was kind of fun.
I think I saw that one. Was that when he gets on the boat and he goes to get his family?
Yeah.
In the swamp boat and stuff.
Yeah, he's a first responder and, you know, California falls into the ocean and he's got to go in and rescue his family from the building because the building's sinking. And
yeah.
It's fun, but it's a trifle.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those films that you watch and you're like, okay, that was there. You're not really going to remember much of anything about it. Because it doesn't do anything well enough to be memorable.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a way to kill time if you don't feel like watching The Poseidon Adventure or The Towering Inferno again.
Yeah.
Or even Daybreak, which is a better movie than San Andreas.
Yeah.
It's a lot of the new disaster movies don't hold up well because they're built around this idea that the spectacle of CGI is going to be enough to carry the movie.
Yeah.
2012 was a good example of that.
Yeah, I was going to mention 2012. That's on here.
Because you're going to see that movie to see all of the destruction and all of the madness.
Sure.
Independence Day at least had memorable characters.
I went for that because they blew up the White House.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why everybody wanted to see it.
That was they blew up the White House. It's crazy.
If you remember the trailer of that movie, the teaser trailer
was amazing.
Was the White House?
The movie wasn't that great, but the trailer was amazing.
But the movie at least had memorable characters and memorable scenes.
Yeah,
like everybody remembers Will Smith punching the alien in the face like he's Chris Rock at an Oscar show,
right.
And saying "Welcome to Earth,"
right.
And then pulling out the cigar and smoking it. Everybody remembers. What's his face from everybody remembers Taxi, Judd Hirsch.
Yeah.
And
yeah, he's good in that.
And Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah.
Like in the UFO uploading the virus, saving the world.
Yeah.
You know,
Bill Pullman is the president.
Yeah,
President Light.
Bill Pullman may be the most forgettable character in the whole thing.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a good movie. It's way too long. It has a ton of needless story in it that just exists to develop characters that you don't really care about.
I saw it the night it came out, and I was sorely disappointed. I'm like, that sucked.
The thing about it is it's one of those films that grew on me because you went to go see the destruction,
yeah,
and then you realize that the destruction was just the end of Act 1.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, there's more.
Yeah.
And the there's more kind of turns into Stargate.
Okay.
And Stargate was not a good film.
Yeah, it started good, and then it kind of went nowhere,
like,
I thought.
Once the flying saucers started coming out, it was like, oh no, here we go. And Independence Day does the same thing.
Yeah.
You do get Brett Spiner in it, and he's great in that movie.
Does he show up in Independence? Oh, yeah, okay, he does show up. He's a scientist,
he's
right?
He's a scientist who gets possessed by the alien, and, you know.
Yeah.
So it kind of grew on me over time.
I liked Mars Attacks. To me, that was a better disaster movie about aliens coming down and wiping everybody out. I thought that was great. Sci-fi movie.
I lost it with that movie because it's going in too many different directions at once.
I loved it. I thought it was great. I like to go in a lot of directions at once, though, and so does Tim Burton.
But it's a film that has no rules and no boundaries.
That's why it's great.
And it can be entertaining, but it just goes in too many directions.
Yeah.
You know, we talk about horror movies. Part of what makes a horror movie work is that there's rules.
Sure.
Like, if Michael Myers can do anything and be anywhere at any time, then it's not scary.
Right. Yeah. They get a little too powerful. Like, that's one of the things with Freddy and, well, Freddy and Jason and Michael Myers, they get too powerful.
Yeah.
It's like, what are the rules here? It's like, you just, you know, you can be aboard for, okay, he just put a knife through a person and brought them up into the air 2 feet off the ground. But then all of a sudden, when he's hit by all these firefighters with machetes and axes and things and guns, and he still lives, you're like, well, wait a second.
Yeah.
Is he a person or not?
We're not making a horror movie anymore. We're doing something else.
Yeah.
You know, it's an action movie at that point.
Right.
It's scary when the character that you care about walks into the house and you know the killer is there and the character you care about doesn't. Okay,
right.
That's Thriller 101. That's going back to Hitchcock. I'm going to show you the bomb under the seat and then I'm never going to reference the bomb again.
Right.
We're going to have this conversation we're going to have this conversation going on above that seat.
Yeah.
And the whole time you're sitting there waiting for that bomb to go off. Basic thriller rules. If all of a sudden, you know, Michael could just show up in the house out of nowhere, well, how is that scary?
Yeah.
And that's kind of where the Friday the Nightmare on Elm Street movies fell apart. Because in the first one, Wes Craven is playing around with screen direction and playing around with the idea of dream logic, where within the dream anything can happen, but within the real world it can't.
Yeah.
So as long as you can stay awake, you can stay safe. Once you fall asleep, it's the equivalent of walking into the house.
Right.
As that series went on, it got more into the dream logic side of things.
Yeah.
And it kind of turned into a parody of itself.
Well, what was great about the first movie was, how are you staying awake?
Yeah.
And that's another thing for the audience. That other great question is like, would you be able to stay awake so Freddy doesn't come and get
the
you?
First
how
one,
long can you do it? What would you do?
The first one is legitimately scary. After that, they start getting silly, but they lean into it and they become fun.
Yeah.
And that can be entertaining as well. Most disaster movies know not to take themselves too seriously.
Let me give you a top 50 disaster movie. So ranked as number one, Titanic. I guess we can agree on that. Number two, we mentioned this in previous weeks, and I love this movie, is Contagion. We talked about that.
Yeah.
You know, with respect to, you know, COVID and all the crap
that's
we've been dealing with there.
That's a great disaster movie. It is a disaster movie.
Yeah, and Deepwater Horizon's number three. I still haven't seen this one, The Wave. Do you know anything about this?
Yeah, I've seen The Wave.
It says, well-acted and blessed with a refreshingly humanistic focus. The Wave is a disaster film that makes uncommonly smart use of disaster film cliches.
It's another tsunami movie.
A Norwegian geologist and his family fight for survival when a massive tsunami comes and gets them.
Yep.
The Impossible, that's the one that I had brought up. That's number five. Like I said, I thought it was fantastic. I really liked The Impossible. I don't know this one, Black Sea, and I also don't know Greenland. Greenland was from 2020. Black Sea is from 2014. I don't know either of these, but they're both disaster movies. One is about comets attacking Earth, and the other one is on the sea. Jude Law assembles some sailors, and I don't know, some disaster happens at sea. That's basically the byline for it.
Oh, yeah. I've seen Greenland. You know who stars in Greenland, which is why I don't remember much about
Gerard
it?
Gerard
Butler.
Yeah.
If Gerard Butler is in a movie, it is utterly, utterly forgettable.
Yeah, 300 was good. No?
But that was Zack Snyder. Like,
yeah.
And
Gerard Butler.
What you remember about that film is all the visuals and all this. You don't remember Gerard Butler other than that one line.
All right.
You know?
Yeah.
But I did see Greenland on HBO, and
no, worth seeing. Here's
it's
one.
Not bad.
Well, Poseidon Adventure number eight. Number nine is one we haven't talked about this week, but we talked about in the past. I would consider this a comedy, though. Sharknado.
Yeah.
It's number nine.
Yeah, Sharknado's fun.
Airport is down as number 10. Towering Inferno number 11. Burning Sea. I don't know anything about this one. 2021. Burning Sea falls back on disaster movie formula, but the end results are gripping. It says it's starring a bunch of people I don't know. 1969, Norwegian government announces discovery of one of their largest oil fields, and something happens there where it burns. Snakes on a Plane, again, not a disaster movie. 13, and I also thought an awful movie. The only thing that was good about Snakes on the Plane was the trailer.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even it was actually a joke. It was a meme, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And then it became the...
It you know, it was fun, but it, really unnecessary.
Yeah, Twister's number 14, number 15, Sharknado 2, Last Voyage on Rotten Tomatoes from 1960 is number 16.
How are we getting Sharknado 2 ahead of things that should be on this list?
No kidding. Robert Stack and Dorothy Malone vacationing on a cruise ship when disaster strikes. The Last Voyage, haven't seen that in a very long time, but I remember enjoying that one. Don't Look Up is at number 17. Again, I thought it was crap.
I got to question the taste of anyone who votes for that.
Volcano, San Andreas, and The 33 round out the top 20. I don't know anything about The 33.
33 is the Chilean
gold mine. Yes,
disaster
it's
movie.
Ron Howard, right? Who did that?
Antonio Banderas, I thought.
Directed by, Patricia Riggin, it says. Antonio Banderas is the star of the 33.
He produced it as well. He was the force that got that movie made.
Yeah, that's cool. I'd like to see that one. So those are the top 20 disaster movies. Let's see what else is in here. Earthquake, we talked about, 21. Oh, here's one that I wanted to bring up, and I hate this movie, The Perfect Storm. Did you ever...
Not a disaster movie.
Did you like The Perfect... I don't consider it a disaster movie either. It was a bunch of rich fishermen, and they made it sound like they were these heroes from Gloucester that went out to sea, you know, and I'm like, oh my God, what a crappy movie.
Yeah.
And the payoff of that final scene in the movie was in the trailer.
Well, no.
And I always hated when they show the final scene in the trailer. I'm like, come on.
Nobody knows what actually happened to those guys.
Well, they drown.
Well, obviously, but I mean, nobody knows what actually happened to those guys. So everything that you see on the boat is some writer's imagination of what it's like to be a Gloucester lobsterman. It's like, give me a break.
Yeah, it's crap. Hurricane, 1979. Never saw that one, but Jason Robards and Mia Farrow in Hurricane. Sharknado 3 is at number 32. Moonfall's in here. The Core, Deep Impact was one. Day After Tomorrow is in here at number 24. I remember that was a popcorn thriller with... Dennis Quaid and I think Morgan Freeman is the president in that. Jake Gyllenhaal. Day After Tomorrow. What else we got in here? Anything? The Hindenburg. There's another disaster altogether. Let's build up this gigantic gas balloon and throw a bunch of people in it and see what goes wrong.
That was fine.
Pompeii. Well, that was an entire city burning, right? In 79 AD, 80 AD, Pompeii. That's in here. Daylight is in here, number 44. Geostorm. Yeah, you're getting into...
another Gerard Butler movie.
Yeah, you're right. It is another Gerard Butler movie. And
He's the Jason Robards of the 2000s.
Meteor is at number 49. Oof. And number 50 is Beyond the Poseidon Adventure from 1979.
Ooh.
It, with 0% for Rotten Tomatoes scores.
Yeah, shouldn't have been done. Yeah.
Concord, Airport 79 is at number 48.
Ugh, but, also shouldn't have been done.
Yeah, I remember that was on there. Robert Wagner, and it was just like, where are all the stars from the original Airport movies? They're not here anymore. And we should also bring up Airplane. The best, one of the best, if not the best comedies of all time is Airplane. And a disaster movie.
Yeah.
And that's worth seeing. I rewatched... Naked Gun this past week and a few Police Squads, so I've been meaning to watch Airplane again. But that'll give you a nice little start. I would say for you, Derek, go and see Take Shelter. I think you would like it, and I think it would fit under the category of disaster movies for you. It's really a cool movie.
I may look into that. I'm going to recommend that you see Last Night because I think you will appreciate its humor and its overall sort of ambiance.
Last Night, and also I think the British movie that you had mentioned, Threads.
Yeah.
I'm going to see that in full. And plenty of disaster movies.
Watch Threads like before you're going out to have fun, because it's not a movie that you watch and then go to bed because you're up all night thinking about it.
Yeah.
We've got a couple of weeks coming up to Black Friday.
Yep.
And I always talk about when I'm writing about movies, you know, is it worth buying now or waiting until Black Friday? Because Black Friday is when the big discounts come. And we're getting our first insight into what's going to be on sale this Black Friday.
Mm-hmm.
So here's a few things. You want Return of the Jedi, $14.98 on Blu-ray.
Really?
Yeah. The Office, complete series on Blu-ray, $90. That's not a huge... Game of Thrones is almost half off, $111.48 on Black Friday. What else have we got in here?
Most people streaming everything now, but there are a lot of extras on there.
You know, if you're smart, you're buying physical media because you don't have to worry about the stream going down and it works if there's no internet.
Yep.
Zack Snyder's Justice League. I'm convinced that a better version of that movie is going to come out with extras on it. This one doesn't really have any. Mm-hmm. But for $10 on Blu-ray, you could do worse.
Yeah, it was good. I mean, it was worth seeing once, I thought.
Yeah.
But it was good.
Target. This is one. If for whatever reason you don't own Harry Potter on Blu-ray, Harry Potter, the complete 8-film collection, $33.
Mm-hmm.
All 8 Harry Potter movies for what you would pay for a single 4K disc right now.
Yeah.
That's a really good one. We're not interested in the new Space Jam. No one's interested in the new Space Jam. Other than that, Target's a little bit disappointing for the Black Friday this year because they're doing a buy two, get one free deal.
Yeah.
And they're going to have some $6 movies thrown in there as well, but the buy two, get one free is basically like, yeah, get whatever you want and we'll give you a discount on it. So you're going to wind up saving something like 15%, and that's probably not what you're looking for on Black Friday. Over at Best Buy, we find out what they made too much of. That they're looking to aggressively discount. And guess what we got this year, folks? Wonder Woman 1984.
Wow.
4K.
Talk about disasters. I like 1984, actually. I liked it more than the first one.
$10.
Yep.
Mortal Kombat, 4K.
I paid like $27 for that in the theater.
$10.
Yep.
Alita Battle Angel, 4K. $10. Tenet, 4K. Christopher Nolan movie.
Still haven't seen it.
$10.
Yeah,
you can also stream that in any number of places.
We only got about a minute left.
So the other thing I will tell you is definitely go check out vinegarsyndrome.com and see what their Black Friday deal is going to be. That will go live on Black Friday.
Nice.
Check out zavi.com. They're currently running a big sale on a lot of the Arrow Video and Severin Films releases that they have.
Very nice.
So some good boutique stuff coming.
All right. Next week we are going to do, I'll probably play some music next week. You will not be with me next week. I might hit Winston Kidd in here again for Real Horror Show.
You told me you were not going to be here next week. So,
no, I can be here.
I went ahead and let my wife schedule something.
Oh, well, we were supposed to go to dinner tonight, and we didn't do that.
Well, you know, life happens.
One of us will be here next week, if not both of us. Real Horror Show, episode 8. That's it. See you next week, everybody. Thanks, Derek.
Take care.